Hi, everyone. I'm excited to bring to you Christy Sullivan, who we've met through a book that we, well, your second book. This will be my first book that we are publishing together. And I'm really excited to have you on the show. And it seems like, you know, you do a lot of really cool things. You're a yoga teacher. You're also a coach, a wellness professional, and you do marketing as well, right?
Yeah, multidimensional. I call it also evolving. My, I look at it like stepping stone. You start off with one thing, you build off of it. Certainly my marketing background is helping me now in my own business and endeavors. So I see it all tied together, and I love communication still, even while I'm doing the wellness and self-care.
Yeah. I think it all ties in together, right? Like we don't realize like how important communication is with just being able to just, well, first like know yourself, but then being able to understand other communication styles, because everyone has their own style of communication. I think that took me a while to figure out that not everyone communicates the same way as I do.
Yeah. And when I was actually in my last long-term job, I did a few years of Sandler training. I don't know if you're familiar with that franchise. Yeah. And I learned a lot about DISC and those four styles of communication. And I was fascinated. I call it human dynamics and the psychology of behavior for communication. So I studied that in college, and it was in my career. And when I started to kind of look at how people communicate differently, it was really helpful, and also ties to something called human design that I look at, which is more of the energy of communication as well as how we operate.
Yeah, this human design sounds very fascinating. Would you share a little bit more about what your numbers are? I know, you know, Dr. DeVio was sharing me, like, she's like, oh, I think you might be a 3 or 6 based on your rebellious nature, but would love to hear a little bit what yours is, and maybe, you know, you can evaluate, maybe you could guess to see what I am from, it takes a while, but.
Yeah, I call it the rabbit hole, because it's like looking under the hood of a car, and you see an engine, and it's very complex. And it's really helpful to have someone kind of guide you in looking at what your makeup is. So human design was something that evolved around the 80s by someone who has since passed on, but he kind of channeled the information about this blueprint that we have, this energetic design. Think of it like astrology, but on steroids. And we look at the chakra systems, and you actually have a chart that most people can create online for free, but reading that chart or looking at it can be really daunting. There's a lot of information, a lot of complex symbols, and what does it mean? And I did about a 2-year training to just look at my own human design and look at conditioning that we all have, starting when we were early age, from authority figures and teachers and such, to that conditioning fit us into certain boxes. And when we step back and start to look at who's our real makeup, it's more than just like those four categories of DISC, let's say. This is a more complex system, so it's really helpful. It's hard to guess about somebody, I would say, because it's not like four different boxes. Right. But if you do take a look at the chart, it's really helpful. And one of the areas that I identify with is a profile called the role model. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that I can look forward to, after being 50, really being a mentor to people based on what I experienced in my first 50 years. So if you have that profile, I feel like that's where I'm a guide and mentor coming up close to that age, not quite, but that's sort of my path and my journey. That's one little tidbit about human design. But it also helps to recognize how we're operating on a daily basis and whether we're really living in that design. And you can feel it when you start to live in it, because you feel more aligned things start to come up for you, whether it's invitations or opportunities to do things. And I think it manifests more abundance in your life when you start to live that design.
That's awesome. It kind of reminds me a little bit about Enneagram. Is it kind of similar?
Yeah. And Enneagram, again, there's what, 8 different styles or 9, and you, or the Myers-Briggs, where you can kind of come up with a combination. But with this, there's a bunch of energy lines that when you look at, you may or may not have, and each one is very specific to a certain way energy. So it's, like I said, a lot more complex. It's like looking under that hood and seeing all the wiring and trying to figure out, well, where does this wire go to and what is this energy like? So it's more than that, but that is a great example. It's along those lines of Enneagram or Myers-Briggs.
Okay. And then what made you fascinated about taking, I mean, because 2 years is a pretty long commitment. So I guess like what prompted you to want to take a look underneath that hood? Because I don't think everyone does necessarily. Some people are kind of like, no, I'm okay. I don't necessarily want to work, you know?
Definitely. Well, for me, I heard a message about, and it came at a time when I knew that doing things that we normally do or have been taught to do, I just started to question, well, why do we do things this way? And I'm very fascinated, especially in this day and age, as things are shifting and systems are in a way being disrupted, mm-hmm. that we're learning that things like creativity and collaboration are more important than ever, and it's very individualized. So rather than a system that you have to plug into, we're now more creative. When I heard this message about the conditioning and how, and in particular, I have a background in marketing, as I said, in communication. And marketing, for example, if you have a marketing expert that says, well, this is the formula you follow for your business. And if you do this, you'll go from A to Z, you'll get the clients, you'll get the income. That doesn't work for everybody. That particular process may not work for everybody. And so I became fascinated because I realized that that's why sometimes people are frustrated or upset that things aren't working for them. It's probably because it's not in line with their design. So when I heard that message, I really wanted to study more of that. And what I came out with was, it wasn't just a 2-year study in human design. That was just the foundation. Then it grew from there to a platform of self-care. What are you doing for yourself on a daily basis, as often as you can, to move inward in the body, to access your inner wisdom? In human design, the head is really just meant for awareness and thinking. It's not meant for solving or coming up with the life answers. That, as we know, comes more from the inner guidance, from our soul, from whatever you want to call it, intuition. And that is down below the head. And that's why self-care is important, because self-care is the way to access that inner being, whether you're doing things like physical or emotional self-care or spiritual self-care, I call it.
That's interesting. I think not everyone necessarily thinks about the soul as much, right? Or even the spiritual aspects of, because I think in Western culture, sometimes like, because I do think there's a pretty high amount of like, so can you be like an atheist, but still be in touch like spiritually with your soul and body? Like it's not necessarily religion based, right? It's more just being connected to the universe, the energy around you, right?
Yeah, and I just heard this recently that even if you don't follow a religion or may consider yourself atheist, often everyone at one point asks, why am I here? And what brought me here? And that kind of bigger life question. It's different, I think, than following the rules of religion. It's more, how do you explore what feeds you spiritually, what helps you to be the best version of yourself? Kindness and compassion and love, and that those kind of qualities that we want and we want from others. So it's that exploration of what does our soul want? And part of that is connection to others. Part of that is growth for ourselves, evolving. And so I think it is much more than whether you believe in something, but rather looking inward at what is your life purpose? Why are you here?
Yeah, and so you did mention, so what are some of the practices that you take to help like source you and help you connect internally? Because I think, like you said, I do think we have to start with ourselves, and once we're sourced, then we're able to give more, right? I think it always starts from within.
Yeah, and I see self-care as something that has to be also customized for each individual. For me, for example, being in nature is so important, maybe even being near water, making sure that I have time to slow down and to be instead of do. I certainly like doing. I like to stay busy, but I know that balancing that out with time for myself and even on my own is important for me to pause and listen to the deeper wisdom and get clarity and clear my mind. So tying to the book that we're both in collaboration to create and coming out soon, it's called The Great Pause, because this time more than ever, and not everyone is doing this, but there are certainly more people, I think, realizing, wow, we need to pause. We have stopped commuting and running to different activities like we used to a few months ago or last year. And that pause can actually bring us more opportunity to look inside ourselves and connect deeper. And I think that self-care needs to be done on a daily basis. And again, it depends for you what that is. It needs to be something that brings you peace or joy, or perhaps just some intention that you're looking to create. And then you line up the activities or the actions and efforts to create that for yourself as a priority, as a necessity and essential, not as the secondary reward or after you've done all your work. I think it needs to come before.
What would you say to people? Because I do think like a lot of parents, I see this with a lot of parents, where they neglect their own, sometimes their own needs, because they're too busy, you know, like driving their kids to practice, or, you know, now, especially now with COVID, like being a stay-at-home mom in addition to their full-time job and, you know, being a teacher as well. So I do see that, I guess what I'm hearing more recently is that it's hard for parents to take care of themselves, especially, you know, because they're juggling multiple roles.
Yes, I know that that's a challenge. The disclaimer I'll give is I don't have children, not in this lifetime. But I see it as putting the oxygen mask on yourself first. And even if it's carving out 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes maybe in the evening, doing something for yourself also has that ripple effect. So it impacts the people that you're around, whether it's your children or your partner or family or other people in your environment. There's a ripple effect, and children especially are like sponges. They're going to absorb and take in what they're seeing around them. They can also be the teachers. They can be the ones who are saying, you know, I'm tired, or I just want to play, or I want to have fun and be creative, or take a break from work, from school. Again, there's many different ways. So it's really got to be customized. And maybe even children and family are part of the self-care, taking hikes or learning something creative or praying together. So there's definitely ways. And I know that there's so much support out there. So once you want to start on that journey, I think it's really important to find the resources and tools. And that's something that I like to connect people to, is people out there who can support the type of self-care that you want on your journey.
Yeah, yeah. And to your point, it is different for everyone. For me, I'm also a nature hiking near water. Like, I love like water and hearing like the sound of a river or waterfall, like really sources me. But I do think like not everyone is as like, you know, like just because that works for me doesn't necessarily mean that my fiance thinks the same way, right? So it is interesting to see how different people source each other or source using different things. Yeah, I think like writing for me, like writing in a journal helps, like kind of like clear my mind, and then taking a walk, like yeah, along the river, I know it helps me a lot. But yeah, I think sometimes like we're always on the go, especially in, you know, I live in Manhattan, so when you see everyone else kind of running around with their heads chopped off, you kind of like you don't, you know, you kind of just follow the, it's, there's a lot of herd mentality sometimes. So it is a practice, but yeah, it is tough too, because like especially during COVID, right? Like right now it's like everyone's like, I feel like fight or flight mode.
It is. And that I think also goes to a deeper type of self-care, and that's what I call spiritual self-care. This is the type of activity that helps with healing old wounds or traumas, or helping you shift and reprogram maybe limiting beliefs or a mindset that's just not working for you anymore, or what was conditioned in you, and helping you change perspective. And I think what's important is, and again, this may not be for parents who have children, time for going and meditating or going to take a walk. It may be working with a professional to address some of these wounds again that we want to heal. And again, there's a ripple effect when you do that. I've even done some work around ancestral clearing, which they say can help you with generations forward and back, and helping heal things that have been passed down through your family lineage.
Yeah, I think I don't think we often think about like the ancestral lineage, like the, you know, like, but then when you start to think about it, it's like, oh, okay, my grandma and my grandpa was a certain way, so it kind of makes sense. Like, but I don't think we often take a step and really think about it like that, you know. I think we often think in one generation up, one generation down. But you know, when I stop and start to have compassion for my dad, you know, and how what he had to go through being a refugee, you know, escaping Vietnam, I really have much more compassion and more empathy for, you know, maybe some of the mistakes that he's made, you know.
Yeah, and I also had parents who lived through the war in Europe, and I know that generation too don't speak as much about their experiences maybe as we might in these current generations and the ones coming up. But when I did some work around ancestral clearing and understanding what they could have gone through or what they probably went through and how deep it was, and for them it was trauma that they probably buried and probably in order to survive needed to survive and kind of put some of that trauma aside. So it helped for me though in my life to understand what they might have gone through. And it does get passed down through many generations. And I think we're starting to see that too, not just through COVID, but through these other initiatives and calls that people are wanting to heal generations, whether it's slavery or other cultures and what they've been through and how they want to stop that suffering. So I think it's important to look back and forward to know how we can heal and really create something new and a shift to heal.
Well, is this also through human design, or is this something separate?
Well, again, I think that when you look at human design and the concept that we are all energy beings and that we almost come into this life pure and then are conditioned, and that conditioning may come from the ancestral beliefs or the trauma that you might have experienced in your early life, or limiting beliefs that you were taught by parents. And when you recognize that, and that big word awareness, which is such so important, the first step in healing, then you can start to say, well, who am I really? Who am I with this, and who am I without this? And then start to make choices that might feel better, and create beliefs that might feel better and help you serve a more soulful life and purpose that can be, again, out of love and less about that fear, flight or fight that and fear that you were talking about.
Yeah. I do think like society, because there's societal norms or expectations that are kind of like pushed upon us from, I don't know if it's marketing or, but I feel like, you know, if you don't have like the white picket fence, or you don't have, you know, you don't get married by a certain age, or you don't have that when you don't have kids, I feel like there's like a lot of pressure for people to like conform, because I feel like sometimes we do things because of, oh, everyone else is doing it, right? But I don't think everyone is always intentional about their choices, where they're kind of just like, well, my parents want me, you know, this is what people do, right? You know, people go to college, they get a degree, you know? And I find myself sometimes also being trapped in that, where I'm like, well, am I choosing this, or is this like what my mother wants me to do, you know? And it's interesting when you actually start to kind of reflect and be intentional about things.
Yeah, and I think to recognize that there is messaging out there, whether it comes from marketing and companies that have the intention that they want you to buy something or to buy into their philosophy, and systems that also do that, and even family that has that messaging of being and doing certain things a certain way. I think when you step back, you can be more intentional. And it is a process, and it's part of our school here. I also feel that sometimes the loudest voice is who we hear, whether it's in our families or in the marketing message. But I think things are starting to shift, and we have things like this great book coming out, where I feel we're all light workers in that book, here to shed light on a different way to look at things, look at the last few months of what we've been through. And as light workers and empaths, we are starting to evolve in our voice and help others who need to hear something, who need to then become intentional with a different type of message than buy this or do this with this status.
That's awesome. And would you want to go into a little bit more about your recent career change? You know, it sounds like this era actually has helped you become more intentional because of the time to reflect and be a bit more introspective.
Yeah, I've had a long time career in marketing, 20 years at a job that I was just with, that I started to transition out of when this COVID and isolation hit back in March. And it gave me this opportunity to step back and reflect on what was really calling. And for me, I have always had an interest in wellness. I teach yoga, and I have taught yoga for nearly 16 years. And so I started to teach online because the yoga studios had closed. So I had students who were still looking for the classes. And then I had these book opportunities come up, and I started to focus on self-care, because it was important for me on my journey, self-care. In the last few years, my father had Alzheimer's and passed away last year, and it was a real difficult year, the last year in his late stage. And then family crises and a job crisis, where I used self-care, and then COVID came, and I was able to say, what can I do on a daily basis that keeps me sane and balanced? And looking at this through a different lens, a different perspective than the fear or fight or flight. And things started to come up. Opportunities started to come up. I was in touch with my design and I am a generator, which means I'm great at a lot of energy to do things, but it's important for me to wait for the right opportunities. And when opportunities came up, I took the ones that felt good. And suddenly my career really shifted into wellness and helping others. And it feels natural to me. And it feels like this last few months were really a blessing for me to discover that and explore it.
That's awesome. So it sounds like, so is generator like a specific type of being? Like
Yes. In human design, there's five types. And a generator actually makes up about 70% of the population. So a lot of us are generators, or a subset is called manifesting generator. And then we've got someone like Dr. Gavia, who's a projector, and then there's manifestors, and then there's reflectors. And we each kind of bring order to this world. Some are the ones who create the vision. There's others who provide the insight and wisdom. And then there's others who are the ones who get the work done, do the details, and execute, which would be me.
Okay, yeah, I was like, that sounds like generator.
Yes.
And what does the projector do?
A projector type is really the one who provides the insight, the knowledge. Uh-huh. They don't have the sustainable energy as a generator. And that's not bad or good. None of this is black or white. It's just a way of being. So they conserve that energy and take a lot of time to rejuvenate and restore and make sure that they have the right energy. So when they are asked to do things and invited to do things or to speak and provide sort of the guidance, they help guide. And that's really important. That's really a great role to have. Not again that there's any good or bad with the types, but that's the type of role where it helps so many of us to see things in a different perspective and to hear this wisdom.
And then it sounds like, and then within the subtype, I mean, the types, there's subtypes, right? So you said you were a manifestation generator. So how many other generators, subtypes are there?
So there's five altogether. And the generators and manifesting generators are about 70%. And then you've got reflectors are really only 1%, very few. And then the projectors and manifestors are split about 15% each. And so you've got the generators, the guiders of the world, then the manifestors, they're the ones who create. They are great with ideas and inspiration to provide sort of the game plan, so to speak, that after the guides have shown us, well, here's some wisdom, then the manifestors will come up with a plan and then the generators execute. That's sort of a rough way to look at it. But again, when you start to look into beyond just those five types and really look at what your energy shows, your blueprint, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's interesting because I feel like modern school doesn't teach you a lot of these things, but in a way I feel like it's more valuable to learn about the being than just because I feel like it's just rote memorization, right? Which I don't know. Yeah. It's just interesting to see what our school teaches and what I feel like is probably more valuable to learn about, you know, communicating with different humans and different energies, and like I feel like that's way more practical in a way.
It is. It's a different way to look at things, and whether you're studying something like Myers-Briggs or the Enneagram or human design, I think it gives you different perspectives. It's helpful to know what resonates the most with you. So it's the same like self-care or spirituality. Certain things are going to resonate for you at different times in your life too. So to expose somebody to all of those options and theories, I think, especially children in school, can be very good for them and help us with evolving.
Yeah, I think out of the ones I've done, the Enneagram has resonated the most with me. Like, I remember like reading it and feeling so heard, and so like I was like, wow, it's like they're reading my mind. I'm a type two with the achiever wing, and I felt like that was like really eye opening in terms of the self care chapter of the book, where it talks about like this is when you're in a good place, like when you take care of yourself, like this is what's possible. And then it also talks about when you don't take care of yourself, this is what happens. I'm like, oh, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, and it's good to know that contrast, because just like in human design, they talk about being in alignment versus out of alignment. And when you're out of alignment, you want to know what that feels like or the signs of that so that you can shift back either into alignment or do something to help shift or at least find some balance. And again, there's no good or bad. It just helps you to recognize and be aware.
Yeah, I think the not labeling it good or bad is harder than it see. Like for me, like I get it conceptually, but it's sometimes for me, I'm like, this is bad, you know. Like it's hard for me to make that objective shift, you know. Especially when it comes to, I guess like for me, like it said, being able to say no and take on less projects and just focus on like the core. And then like you said, like a lot of it is like just meditation and yoga and just working on my fitness. Like, and then once I do all that, then I'll be at a good place where I can give more, more often, more frequently.
Yeah, I think it's important that we go easy on ourselves, right? Start with non-judgment and just notice when we're judging ourselves. You know, that's, I think, a constant practice. I don't think it necessarily goes away. If it did, then we'd all be the Buddha or enlightened beings. And I think the journey we have here is to know when we're not and to help others in being enlightened and to just have experiences. Unfortunately, not all of them are enlightening, but that's just where we are. And when we can find balance or find ourselves in alignment, we may not be enlightened completely, but at least we know how that can benefit ourselves and others. So I think it starts with non-judgment and or catching at least yourself when you go into judgment, because that also will be how you start to judge others, because you're judging yourself probably first.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. That's such a practice, like having that awareness that when we're being judgmental of others, like it's how we treat ourselves as well. Right. It's sometimes there's a disconnect and people don't see that, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like you're pretty spiritual. Were you always into, like, was there like specific moments in life that has helped you want to become more connected and because I do think a lot of people that are in this work of healing and, you know, wellness have had maybe like experiences in the past. It seems like your father was a big one. Were there other moments in life that you were like, you saw like, ah, okay, this is who I am?
Well, I credit that for me, for my journey, I did grow up Catholic. So it was a foundation for me to explore, consider something bigger than me. And then when I not only took my first yoga class, but then started looking, teacher training or training to teach. And the teachers that I did have at the time helped me to expand my thought around spirituality. For me, learning about yoga and the body and the mind connection and the spirit really started to help me evolve in my thought around spirituality. Not that yoga is, again, a religion. It was more, what is this body that I'm in? How do I feel in it? What does my mind think? What happens when I slow down my mind? Do I feel clearer? Do I feel connected to something bigger? And Then I would say also, and this probably is everybody, but I had challenges in my life, and those were times when I did not feel great and I wondered why they were happening and had some pretty low moments. Even, for example, on the journey with my dad and his disease, it was hard. I talk about this in the book. It was challenging. And when I was able to step back, in fight or flight, it's hard. But when you are able to, everything changes and you can get through bad days. And when you get to something like a better day, you can start to look back and then I would look at, why is this happening to me? And I think my dad also passing, he's been the first person that's really been the closest to me that's passed on. And I was with him actually the day that he passed. I was in the room, and I felt that was a very profound experience, and that I didn't see him as leaving, but just changing and moving into spirit. And I was able to connect that he's still here, or he's in another form, and that we can still connect. So I'm always open to that. And I think that's part of it, is the experiences that you have, if you can be open, that it's teaching you something or bringing you into some lesson to learn and evolve in a positive way, that I think that can help you become more spiritual.
That's interesting. I guess, like, what are your thoughts on, because I do think, like, I don't even, like, the, I feel like in America, or at least like the younger generation, I feel like I think statistically we're becoming less and less like religious in a way. But I do think, like, I guess, like, for me, because I would say I grew up pretty like non-religious, like my mom was Buddhist. So I guess like I connect more with like Buddhism, but I don't know necessarily if I view it like a religion, but more just like a way of life. And I think I was always, because I think you're right, like, I think we all want to have more meaning, right? We all, like, think about at some point in our lives, like, you know, once we take care of our bare necessities, right? Obviously, like, you know, having shelter and food and safety, all that first. But once you get past that, I do think we all go have some sort of existential where we're like, okay, like, what's our purpose in life? And I think for me, I think it's been more of a recent thing where since I've worked on my spirituality a lot more, I definitely feel much more at peace and much happier overall, because I do feel like I'm giving back to the world. I'm you know, contributing, and it's not just about myself. So yeah, I do think most of my life, I feel like the spiritual aspect was missing. But then more recently, since I've been more spiritual, I've felt like a lot more peaceful and happier overall. So yeah, so it's interesting. But I also noticed, like, a lot of young people or who are into science, or, you know, people, I remember like reading like that so many people have felt the same way. They're like, this is like a very common thing that a lot of people feel.
Yeah, and that's some great insights that you had. And if you see religion, for example, as a system that is confined to certain ways and conditions and beliefs, for some people that may work and that may bring them peace. There are some people that need sort of certain parameters and rules, I'll call it. And then there's people who want to be open, I think, to what else is there? Why does somebody else believe something different? And when you start to just explore, it could lead to a different type of spirituality. So again, not that religion is good or bad, but when you look at it as a system, and it may not be a system that you resonate with. And it, again, for me, I grew up with that. So it was what I knew. And then when I started to look at other things, I was drawn to other ideas or just new ways of looking at things. And that resonated with me to just always explore. And for me, it's a matter of being the student, always being willing to learn. And then as a teacher, being able to share with somebody, not impose, but to share with them.
I'm curious, like, do you see any similarities between, you know, like your yoga practice and then also with your faith as well? Like, do you see a lot of, I'm curious as to what the similar synergies are, right? Because I do hear that, you know, it can be if you, to be honest, like, I don't know too much about, the Catholic faith, but I do hear that, you know, a lot of Catholics, I know, like, they say that it's hard for me to understand, but the way they describe it, I'm like, man, like, that sounds amazing. But I don't know, for me, it's like conceptually hard to like get it, but it works. And I'm like, you know, they're all amazing people. So I'm like, you know, it must be whatever it is, like, it works.
Well, around the time I think that I started doing yoga, I was starting to treat that as my church in a way. I would go to a yoga practice on Sunday morning, and I wasn't practicing Catholic. I stopped around college, just after college, because I was just interested in exploring other things and messages. And for me, what I was receiving in like a yoga class, especially from the teachers, when they were talking about going inward, finding the breath, taking breaths to calm and find peace. And I just felt different. It made me feel more in tune. And rather than looking outward, it helped me look inward. And some people can find that in religion for sure. And I think something like prayer helps you to feel that, because if you're connected to the part of prayer that's calming and turning inward, especially when your belief is around a higher being. I just felt that way with yoga, that I would, after a yoga class, felt like I shifted and was just more aligned or connected to something bigger than me. And I wanted to, when I teach yoga, I want to help people not necessarily find a religion in yoga, but to be able to start their day in a way that shifts them from the inside first to the outside. So when they make that shift, they can have maybe a better day or be able to face challenges from the day in a better way.
Yeah, you are right. There's something about yoga. I know at the end when there's like a very peaceful state of mind that just feels like really nice. And then when everyone does the om at the end, I always get chills. I'm always like, whoa, that it's like really cool.
Yeah, and the om is a vibration, and religions and a lot of spiritual practices have sound, because sound is that vibration and can really, you can feel it on a cellular level. So you might find it in chanting something like whether it's in Buddhism or Catholicism or Christianity, but when you're doing an om, you can feel that. You can feel that vibration. And I think that's something very profound. It's different than prayer. Some people find sound, music, but also soothing sounds or chanting as a way of connecting inward and like a prayer.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I feel like as we become more like materialistic and capitalistic as a society, I think that's when we start to really try to find that more spiritual connection, right? Because I do think that a lot of people that, you know, have had a lot of career success, or, you know, have bought like their second or third house or whatever, I do see the pattern. It's like, okay, it's like there's something still missing. And then I noticed there's a trend amongst like people that have reached that, and they're like, okay, like now I want to work on my spiritual practice as well. So it's interesting to see that happen.
I think we're seeing it too in this idea of people wanting to simplify maybe that's part of also the great pause. And part of that is not just simplifying what's around us and clutter, let's say, in the house, because again, that can put you out of alignment when you have things that either you're attached to, and sometimes even with meaning that isn't healthy or serving you. And when you start to let go of not only things, but it could be beliefs and ways that you do things and simplify, it can really, I think, help with finding that peace and spirituality as well. And I just see that happening around us. It's not just my philosophy, but I'm seeing a lot of people wanting to simplify what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's why there's a huge Marie Kondo like craze going on, because I think everyone can relate that. Like, I know for me, like when I throw away stuff, I'm like, yes, like I feel so much better. I think minimalism will become more and more popular as people start to realize, like, okay, like this is not really bringing me like happiness, right? You know, obviously keep the core things that do keep you happy, but I'm sure there's a lot of other stuff that we probably don't need, you know, that's holding on, like sometimes even like emotional baggage, you know?
Yeah, I heard this theory once that if you stand in your room and connect, imagine an imaginary piece of string to every item in that room, think of how many strings there are, what you're attached to, and how that feels. And it doesn't mean clear the room, but if the attachment is something that brings you joy and peace and lightness, then that's serving you, it sounds like. And what may bring you joy and peace may not be the same for somebody else, but when you find that, it's light and simple.
Well, yeah, I feel like we had it's been a pretty awesome conversation. I really enjoyed learning from you, and yeah, this is a conversation I don't have too often, so I really appreciate you, and I want to acknowledge you for, you know, healing the world and sharing your gifts and being a teacher of inner peace and self-care, and we all need that, especially now more than ever, right? So thank you so much, Christy. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to reading your chapter, Davidson. I don't know, what is it on? I'm kind of curious, and I'd love to read it and hear more of an interview about you one day on the topic.
Yeah, it actually ties into a lot of what we said. So I'm involved with like 7 different nonprofits, and you know, I volunteer a lot, and I do a lot of like CrossFit and a lot of like interesting stuff, right? But as you can imagine, working in Manhattan, and just, I host a lot of my own events and happy hours and networking groups, and create a bunch of masterminds and stuff. And basically, like, it was crazy. I think at one point I was like waking up at like 5:30 most days and not getting home till like 11 PM. So, you know, the great pause is a perfect title for the book, because basically all of the events that I was like emceeing and hosting and all that pretty much stopped. And then I work in the Empire State Building for LinkedIn, which is like a very lively, very, you know, I'm a very extroverted person. So, you know, having 4 months to myself and kind of just being just by myself and not getting distracted from, or not, you know, not distracting myself with other activities, like,
has, and being more intentional.
Exactly. Yeah. So it helped me focus a lot more on spending quality time with my family, my fiance, and time for myself to just reflect and journal. And it's been cool, but it's been quite different, you know, but it's been nice as well, because it's helped me realize, like, okay, like I don't need others like validation. Like I don't need others to show me my worth, my value. So in a way, like it's helped me accept who I am and be more comfortable in my own skin, and not, oh, this is what my managers, my directors, my VPs want me to do. Cause sometimes like I feel like I'm like on a hamster wheel, and I'm like, okay, like, you know, get the next raise, next paycheck, next, you know, whatever it is. Right. And I'm like, okay, like, is this who I want to be? Like, is this what I'm about? So it's helped me reflect on a lot of these very valuable concepts. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm looking forward to reading your chapter.
Thank you, Krista. Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to read yours as well and everyone else's. And yeah, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for having me.
You're welcome.